What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Crossing Broadcast. We've got a great one for you today. Let's get right into it because Doc Rivers officially gets the Milwaukee Bucks job, reported first by CNN Sports. I don't even know if CNN Sports knows they reported it, but they did. Lefko yesterday, if you're watching the games on TNT. We're joined by Sean Bernard, Sixers NBA insider for Fox Philly Gambler, and a staff writer for Philadelphia SN. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. It's been a hectic time. It's a good vibes in the Sixers world, which has been far from the case for most of my time covering this team. So good vibes right now, and the Doc Rivers news to the Bucks has even put me in greater spirits.
Yes. So a lot of times you'll look at this as like, hey, you know, I'll treat it like an ex-girlfriend getting another guy right now. So did she get a better looking guy, or are you actually the better looking guy, you think, in this situation with Doc Rivers?
This is like the case where it's that toxic ex that you know you want no part of. And then you see that guy that you always kind of are jealous of, but you secretly like you hate him. Like, you
know, he's hotter than you.
Yeah. And then you see them hooking up and you're like, oh, he's going to ruin him too. Or she's going to ruin him too. So it's good vibes watching this from afar, looking across the party, seeing the way this goes down. This is your toxic ex taking down the guy you're jealous of.
Okay, so she's popping tires. She's keying cars. Oh, she might light his house on fire, TLC style.
Absolutely, yeah. There is no boundaries for what the grounds that Doc Rivers will go to end a team.
Is this the best scenario or situation that the Sixers have had to get to the third round since Jimmy Butler was in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I mean that both internally and externally, that I think there's some real deal, awesome things going on within the Sixers, the leaps that Joel Embiid is taking. Nick Nurse is a huge factor in my optimism for this team. And then when you look at the Bucks, there's some real deal things going on within those teams that Doc Rivers is not going to be able to fix some of these defensive issues on this team. There's a lot of like pecking order issues and kind of locker room stuff that seems to be going on there. So between the Sixers improving and having some really tangible strides forward as a team, and then looking around the league, some holes in the Eastern Conference, the pathway is there in a way that I think many years just straight up wasn't.
Okay. Let's talk about how crazy this is, because Adrian Griffin, like, yeah, the defense was there, was terrible. Giannis obviously fell out of favor with him. But, like, the dude was still 30-13. Is this more on, like, how bad the NBA has that, like, you know, there's no parity enough that, like, you know, if you have two stars or you have, you know, a star and a couple of good role players and you still make it to 30-13, but you still lose your job. I mean, second in the conference. Turns out Giannis didn't want Nick Nurse, and now he's stuck with Doc Rivers, which is kind of a hilarious footnote right there. But like 30-13 getting fired is insane.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a star-driven league, and I think that's what it comes down to, that Giannis lost faith in Adrian Griffin. And if you're an organization like the Milwaukee Bucks who have no other outlet to get a player the magnitude of Giannis, that you're not going to be able to sign a guy in free agency, that they've done an excellent job appeasing him, keeping him happy, this was the next step in that, that they would rather sacrifice Adrian Griffin, who I do think got a raw deal here, and he was far from perfect. Like, I think there were issues in how he coached, but it's a tough situation to be a first-time head coach, first-year head coach, and have legitimate championship expectations. So from my end, I think he deserved to have a little bit more leash there. We see how the NBA is run. I think Giannis was fed up with it, and now they bring in, you know, the ultimate closer, Doc Rivers, to try and seal the deal here.
we got some great stats from Emmanuel Acho, of all people. Emmanuel Acho, of all people, says, who is Doc Rivers? Rivers has lost an NBA record 32 closeout games. Rivers has lost an NBA record 7 series when leading 3-2. Rivers has lost an NBA record 10 game 7s. Doc Rivers has lost an NBA record 12 series when holding a series lead. Can't be much worse. I guess Adrian Griffin can be worse than that, which is, well, again, I know people didn't like him. I know he wasn't, you know, the favorite. Now Milwaukee's paying three coaches between him, Bud, and now Doc Rivers, which is crazy. But, you know, it's not their money, so who cares? It's not your money, so who cares? What is the thinking going into this? Like, how does somebody like Doc Rivers, like, this is always a thing that, like, gets me so angry. And we've all known people like this. Mm-hmm. The failing upwards. You could kind of look at it like Cliff Kingsbury's getting an offensive coordinator interview from the Eagles. another guy who's had Patrick Mahomes, who had Johnny Manziel, who had Kyler Murray. Like, he's never truly developed somebody into like this all world quarterback. He couldn't win at Texas Tech with Patrick Mahomes. Like, these guys that just fail upwards. Like, yeah, sure, it's probably the agents on one end, but it's insane. What is the thinking behind hiring Doc Rivers of all people after you see those stats from Manuel Acho?
Yeah, I seriously can't wrap my mind around what could have possibly made Milwaukee watch the way that Doc Rivers has coached these past couple years and think that is our guy. That is the difference maker right there. And he has never had, I guess, a longer leash driven. Like, I do think that there was a point in time where Doc Rivers was a very good NBA head coach. But I think that he is a guy who has been lost in the times, that with the advancements of basketball, he has not kept with that. And that's, it's difficult. It's a difficult task. Like, just in the past, like, two decades, think about the growth in the three-point line, just how much the game has changed from a stylistic standpoint. It takes a lot of adjustments to stick with that. And Doc Rivers just frankly has not been a guy that has kept with that. When you look back at some of the players and combinations that he has coached, it's ridiculous, like, the lack of results. And just most recently with the Sixers, like, those 3 years, there's obviously other scapegoats with things, the Ben Simmons moment with the Hawks, all these things. But like last season, just getting straight up outcoached with like having, when the Celtics go to the two big lineup and Doc just has no audible, he's got no other option for what this team can do. He's very much a guy that does his homework, has his game plan going in, but there's no feel for the in-game adjustments. And for a guy that's been around basketball as much as he had, it's pretty just concerning and just shocking, like the lack of options that feel like in his bag. And really, it's looked night and day from the Sixers' perspective. See what Nick Nurse is doing with this team. So now that it's kind of been like a wake-up call with that, it's really nice to see from the Sixers' end. But yeah, I just straight up don't get it. And he's very much a reputation guy. I just don't see a lot of substance in his coaching. And he's a guy that will talk himself up to anyone. And I also think there's a little bit of some of the dirty games going on here as far as Doc being an advisor to Adrian Griffin throughout the season. And then all of a sudden,
you think there's a little Caesar, a little Brutus right there? Brutus stabbed Caesar in the back?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think it's important to note in that, like, Doc was in the running for this head coaching job along with Adrian Griffin. They ultimately went with Griffin, didn't want Nick Nurse. And it's just all bizarre to me that him taking the commentary job and then him being an advisor, and then all of a sudden he's head coached like halfway through the season.
Yeah, that was like when Vogel got hired and Jason Kidd was sitting on the bench and everyone was like, Vogel's going to be out within 30 games and Jason Kidd's going to take over, because that was LeBron's choice and everything. But that is a good point, where it does feel like, going back to the X comparison, there's a little bit of cheating allegations going on, you know, before it was maybe cut and dry a little bit on the breakup. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. The one friend that she laughs a little extra hard at the jokes, or, you know, she lingers around. There's a little something there. It feels like a little bit of that going on.
I like it. I like it. So let's get over to Joel Embiid. 70-point game, 18 years to the day after Kobe's 81. Everybody was down at the Wells Fargo Center, the Farg, whatever you call it. Probably mostly entertained by Victor Wembanyama. I think you were down at the game, correct?
Yeah, yes, okay. I was.
All right, what was it like before the game? What was the energy like?
It was cool. Seeing Wemby up close was awesome. I had a chance to check out the warm-ups from courtside, so getting able to check out that.
Legit tall?
Yeah, legit tall, like tallest human being I've ever seen. And he's big time into like the stretching and yoga, so he was doing that like front and center, like lifting up the arms and doing this thing. And it's like, the man can legitimately like standing dunk, and the way that like his limbs are just constructed is something I've never seen before. And pairing that with a guy who's very fluent as a mover and being able to dribble all these things, he really is like an alien. Like, it was crazy to see. He's obviously very young in his trajectory as a player, but he's going to be the real deal. There's no doubt about it.
Do you think people in the Sixers fans were even like, kind of like, all right, yeah, we got a good team here, but we all want to see Wembanyama? Did it feel like that, the energy?
He has like the superstar aura already. Like, when he was walking off the court for warmups, people were sprinting over to the exit to go check him out or try and get a high five and all that stuff. So, and he seemed to carry himself like a guy that is the ultimate professional, that has a good head on his shoulder. So gained some respect in that regard. But yeah, he's got every bit of the superstar aura already. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting thing about the game was obviously Embiid's 70 points. Did it with one main three-pointer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I loved his comments after the game, because he was getting all this praise heaped on him. The guys are they're throwing water all over him and everything. But it seems like he doesn't give a shit about awards now. And maybe he doesn't, maybe he does. No one knows this besides Joel Embiid. But like, it seems like he's chasing the championship this year, and he doesn't care about MVP, as we know. If he doesn't play 65 games, he won't even be eligible for the award. Did you kind of get that sense about how he answered questions after the game?
Yeah, he definitely handles himself like that. I do think it's kind of been beaten into him, this mindset that he gets the public reception, he gets the stuff that is thrown at him constantly for the postseason shortcomings. And I think for sure, like, the postseason is absolutely his priority, winning a championship. I do think Embiid's a guy that is motivated by watching from afar, seeing what Nikola Jokic has done and having the championship last year. I think watching Jokic win MVP the back-to-back years before him, that was then kind of the main goal in Embiid's mind, to overtake him for that. And now watching him win a championship last year, that Embiid's right in that same mind frame. I think in his jar of hearts, he does care. And frankly, I'm cool with that, that I like guys that want to be the best, want to have those accolades. Because as much as, like, you know, it does not matter as much as championships, when everything's said and done and when you're looking at that player resume, having MVP, having defensive player of the year, having the scoring titles on those things, those do matter for how guys are remembered when we talk about legacy. And I do like that Embiid wants to be the best with that kind of thing, but it's absolutely the focus on playoff success and winning an actual championship, which is cool to see him grow in that kind of mature aspect.
How bullshit is it going to be when he doesn't win the MVP and everyone knows he's the MVP because he didn't play 65 games? The 65 game rule probably will be upped, I think, in the next, I don't know if it has to be the CBA. I don't know if it has to be, you know, just an owner's meeting and whatnot. But, like, you think it's kind of like bullshit that they, you're going to look back on this and you're going to be like, yeah, Jokic might win it, and Edwards might win it, Luka might win it, but there was Embiid who was averaging like 35 points a game and he wasn't even in the top five because he couldn't be.
It definitely sucks. Like, he's got seven more games that he can miss this year. So seven more games out of, I think, 40 left in the season. So there's still like an outside chance that he plays it. But then you're striking that balance of how much are we prioritizing making sure he's healthy and ready for the postseason versus actually going for this. So there's going to be a lot of those debates down the stretch. The fact that he played in two consecutive back-to-backs last week kind of planted the seed in my mind that maybe he is trying to get to the 65 number for sure. I was trying to verify this officially, but I think that's the first time in his career that he's played in two consecutive back-to-backs and won all four games for the Sixers. So it is translating to team success in a way. But yeah, he's absolutely a guy that, like, it is going to be frustrating. He's been the best player in the NBA, no doubts about it. So I hope he earns it and deserves it. And I guess I do appreciate that, like, the 65 game has always been like an overhanging arc thing. Like, that was the main reason why Jokic won his first MVP, is that they didn't think Embiid played enough games for that one. He was a little bit short of it. So that is kind of in writing, I guess, at least that we can see it. But yeah, it sucks because he has been the best player. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And this is how the big dogs celebrate in a practice right now. In a perfect leopard print coat. Right now, that's how you celebrate 70. You go down to the thrift store, you get your little leopard print coat, shoot some free throws, and enjoy 70.
A little Macklemore action.
Yeah, Macklemore. There you go. Who do you like coming out of the East?
I mean, the Celtics are definitely the team to beat. That it's tough to look anywhere else. That they're just so cohesive as a unit. And from a matchup standpoint, I do think adding Porzingis is a real deal asset for them. That when you look at the Sixers team, they're at their worst when the floor is stretched. That Embiid's most comfortable when he is as a rim protector. Super elite in that direction, deterring shots. So they're really going to try and pull him out of the paint with Porzingis. And Porzingis has played very well for them so far. But injuries are always the thing with them. So Celtics are definitely the team to beat. But I do honestly think I would put these Sixers number two above the Bucks at this point. That I think with the turmoil, with the coaching change, and really the defensive issues are what I keep highlighting, that there's just some real deal personnel issues, that when you have these step back from Drew Holiday to Damian Lillard, your defense is going to get significantly worse. So I think they'll be better than they've proven to be in certain points this season, but I would rank the East pretty significantly Celtics, Sixers, Bucks right now.
So when we were going through like the whole 70 point piece, we saw it obviously on the Crossing Broad Twitter, other people that were taking highlights and stuff, the tweets underneath and everything. There are a lot of people who are like, just show me when he's out of the second round, or show me when the Sixers, you know, are good again, or something like that. I've always been like, kind of like, I agree in a way with those takes, because it is frustrating. You have gotten some really gutless performances in the playoffs that really are going to make casual Sixers fans, or Sixers fans that have lived and died with it, kind of turn off. You know, I mean, before the season, their Q score in Philadelphia was probably number four out of all the four major sports. I mean, for them to turn it around the way they have has absolutely been pretty incredible. But I'm still in the back of my mind, because I get like that in a way, like, all right, yeah, he had 70, but show me when he gets out of the second round. But I'm also like, in 20 years from now, you're going to be talking to your kids, and 40 years, you're going to be talking to your grandkids, and they're going to ask you about, like, what was it like to watch Joel Embiid? And you're going to go back and think, like, man, I wish I appreciated that more. I wish I appreciated the 70 points and the 50 points and the efficiency and, yeah, you know, watching something the NBA has never seen, a guy that is this tall that can score from all parts of the court and everything. What would you kind of tell those Sixers fans that are kind of scared to jump on board with this team after years and years of hurt?
Yeah, I obviously get the heartbreak stuff, and it's been through the ringer here in Philadelphia with the Sixers specifically with all these things, the double bounce. I don't got to go down and rip the Band-Aids off for all these moments here. But with this specific team, like, for starters, they do look different. I do think the Nick Nurse factor is a real thing. And then to speak to the Joel Embiid thing specifically, like, this is an all-time great player in the prime of his career, having one of the greatest individual seasons of all time. Like, averaging over 36 points per game. This is the same dude that won MVP last year and is averaging more points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks in fewer minutes per game. His points per minute and points per 36 minutes, 1.055 points per minute, is the greatest in NBA history of any player. Like, he's beating Wilt Chamberlain with these numbers. And with Wilt, like, what's always thrown at Wilt, honestly, his most unbreakable record, Wilt Chamberlain, is the minutes played, that he averaged 48.5 minutes per game in that season, which he averaged 50, which we're never going to see a player do that. That means he played every minute of every game plus every minute of overtime. So that's going to be something that stands forever. When we talk about just like an efficiency, a scoring, and it's ridiculous the things that Joel is doing. He's shooting 57.9%. from the mid-range at the 15-foot level this year. So the way that he's opened up his game, diversified the ways that he's scoring, something we've never seen before. So I do think that Joel should be appreciated more. The things that he's doing are truly historic and will be stuff that goes down in the record book. Like that 70-point performance the other day, he's the only player in NBA history to have a 70-point, 15-rebound, and 5-assist game. There's no other player in NBA history that has done that. He's only the ninth guy to score 70 periods. So this is truly a special run from him. He's taken his game to another level, and the team has followed. So approach it with an open mind. Don't let the past bruises kind of hurt you too much in this case. And the playoffs will obviously be the ultimate deciding factor, but it really is special things from both Joel and the team right now.
Mm-hmm. When you see Joel Embiid, you know, go out and have a great game, the tweets always come back. And some of my favorite tweets of all time are the ESP tweet and the Governor Rendell tweet. And Craig, I think we have him in the doc. The ESP tweet of one prospect I'm not sold on is Joel Embiid. If I were the Sixers, I would take Noah Vonleh over Embiid. This is the same guy who said he could hit a home run, run for a touchdown, score a basket in the NBA, or maybe score a hockey goal. This will go to the grave. This one will go to the grave. Until he's out of Philadelphia, until he's 6 feet under. And then the Ed Rendell one I want to talk about, actually, because this one gets misconstrued as like hate at Joel Embiid, because he says Joel Embiid, a great pick for Sixers, but we will regret passing on Doug McDermott for years to come. I actually ran into his kid today. His kid works right around me. And he's talking about it on his City Pigeons podcast tonight. And he was telling me that his dad meant that they had two picks in that draft. If you remember, they took Elfrid Payton, traded him to the Orlando Magic for Dario Saric. And that's what the tweet is referencing to. And now I feel bad for dunking on the helpless Governor for the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's easy to forget in the slew of draft picks that were had for that. But yeah, I do think that was referring to Dario. And shout out to homie Dario, man. He's still kind of balling out there in Golden State these days. So cool that he's kind of found his footing. And yeah, the Noah Vonleh one is one that will sit forever, because I know he played a little bit last year. I believe he was with the Hornets. I don't even think he's in the NBA anymore. So yeah, a little bit of a miss from ESP there. And I also miss the days of Joel himself taking to Twitter, man. Like, we forget, before he even stepped on the floor, he was tweeting at Rihanna, tweeting at Kim Kardashian, all these other things.
Twitter was fun though, man. Twitter was fun then. Like, it's not fun anymore. Now he takes Philadelphia out of his profile because maybe he's got to change his profile picture. He's got to, you know, put in a new sponsor and everything. He might not be with Under Armour anymore. He might be with Skechers, blah, blah, blah. And people just freak the fuck out. Like, it sucks. It sucks. It takes away the fun. Like, he could never tweet about Rihanna anymore. What athlete could come in and tweet about Rihanna anymore, going on a date with, you know, Tate McRae or something like that, or Olivia Rodrigo? Like, no one could do that anymore. It sucks.
It does. And those were like the Wild West of Twitter those days. And for Joel specifically, the confidence, and maybe not even confidence, more so I think he like didn't really know what he was doing or stepping into with a lot of these things. But to have the stones to tweet at Rihanna and Kim Kardashian before ever playing an NBA game is awesome stuff. And he went as far as like posting up like a picture with a poster of Rihanna and all these other things. Those were the good days of the Joel Embiid Twitter, no doubt about it.
Can this be the Sixers year?
I think so.
You think they got the horses for it?
I think I'll have a more confident answer after this trade deadline that I think they're one move away from truly being like legit championship contenders. But I think people undersell the impact of Nick Nurse, that this is a guy that the Sixers are going to have a coaching advantage just series in and series out. There's no other coach around the NBA that I look at and say that coach is going to coach circles around Nick Nurse. I've been really impressed with, you watch a game every single timeout, every stoppage, they're changing some sort of defensive formation. The ATOs are the real deal. He's maximizing both Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid, all these factors that he has brought in, and just the confidence to switch things up on a fly is all really refreshing. So Nick Nurse, I would say, is my biggest reason for why. And then Joel's at another level, and they add one more significant piece, one scorer, one other creator. I do think that they're legitimate championship contenders, and I think it's there for the taking.
Our buddy Ford says the Sixers need a score.
Yeah,
I would mostly agree with that.
A secondary creator, a guy like, I guess my ultimate fear with this team, Tyrese Maxey, I can't praise enough that he's answered every call, but there's just so much on his shoulders that having a guy, DeJounte Murray is a hot name as a potential guy. I don't think that ultimately ends up being the guy that they go with, but a guy like that who can be a secondary creator, who can play make a little bit with the second unit, I think it has to be one of that level of players, not just another role guy or a guy that is a complimentary piece. I do think they need like a legit asset player, which isn't the easiest thing to come by, but if they can get that, and I think there are players for the taking. So I would agree that there does need to be another scoring punch, but at the same time, Maxey's answered the bright lights and flying colors so far, so I can't fully doubt him either.
How the fuck was he kept off the 41-man roster?
Yeah, insane on that. So insane on that. And I do think, like, nationally, people don't appreciate how good Tyrese Maxey truly is yet. But yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. Some of the names on there that have made it over Maxey are absolutely absurd.
Cam Johnson was one of them.
Yeah.
Walker Kessler. And I know you got to look at guys, you know, you have your guards, you have your forwards, you have your, you know, your twos and your threes and everything. But like, Tyrese Max, like, he's a dynamic point guard. I think he will get on. I'm sure there will be some injuries and stuff that will happen. That, and then, you know, guys might make deep runs in the playoffs and everything that maybe they don't want to play for Team USA. It's also kind of tough because they just got embarrassed over the summer. So everybody wants to play for him now. I mean, even Joel Embiid is on that. Yeah. But man, it's nuts to think that like Tyrese Maxey isn't a top 40 American right now.
And he's a top 40 NBA player, period, even including the international period and international guys in the mix, that people are underselling how good he truly is. Like 25 plus points per game, grown in the assists, 6.7, I think he's sitting at right now, which is legit playmaking numbers. He's every bit like the real deal of a potential number two. And one of the things that we bring in the conversation that I know James Harden obviously has his shortcomings, and we saw like the efficiency numbers with Harden and Embiid were unreal. But I think the Maxey and Embiid two-man game is even more dangerous because there's like a randomness in to Maxey's game that opens things up. That with James Harden, he was so elite at the things that he did, but so limited in what those specific things are. There was either the pick and roll, the bounce pass to Embiid, or he calls the ISO, you're settling for the step back three. With Maxey, like the off-ball motion, the way that he can run down pin downs, all these different things that they're running out there, there's just a way more complete playbook. And in the postseason, that's going to be important.
Dude, Bobby Portis must have like pictures of like, I don't know, is the Colangelo still running? And he must have dirty pictures of Colangelo's. I mean, we got Chris Paul. That's just like a lifetime achievement award invite right there. We got Duncan Robinson. I mean, Duncan Robinson over Tyrese Maxey is insane. Josh Hart over Tyrese Maxey is insane. I would even say Drew Holiday over Tyrese Maxey. Alex Caruso over Tyrese Maxey. Elmer fucking Fudd over Tyrese Maxey. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And I think all those names, like Maxey deserves the chance. And Maxey like has a strong track record. Like he kind of fell under the radar, didn't play that great in his one season at Kentucky, the shooting numbers are specifically. I still think that if there was no pandemic shutdown and that it was an NCAA tournament, there's zero chance he slips to 21. Sixers should be forever grateful that he did. But you look back to
COVID.
Yeah, shout out to COVID for sure. But you look back at like the past of his upbringing, he played for Team USA. He was with Ant Edwards for a bunch of these like showcases and AAU events. Like he has the pedigree from back then. So it's kind of strange that he doesn't have this, I guess, national, just public, I guess, thinking highly of him.
Yeah. Anything else you got on the Sixers? Any other points you want to make?
I guess like once again, appreciate Joel Embiid, that I don't want to see the second round takes. I genuinely believe that this is the most impressive individual offensive season that we've seen of all time. The things that he's doing on a night to night basis, at his size, at his efficiency, at the diversity and the ways that he's scoring the basketball, so special. And the growth as a playmaker, all the way that he's just completely elevated this team, it's really ridiculous stuff. Like as much as I'm flashing and talking about this team having a chance, you take Joel Embiid off this roster, and this is like a 25-win team. So that is a credit to Joel for being the anchor that he is on both sides of the floor. And I don't think we've seen, probably since Kawhi Leonard in the Raptors years, a guy that is such an important two-way piece from a defensive and offensive standpoint for a team. And I am buying that he can keep this up for the whole season and into the playoffs.
We just had something here that I want to give Craig right here. Pep Bev called out Wendell Carter Jr. for his post-game comments after the Sixers beat Orlando. Now, this might be one of the reasons why the Sixers actually get to, like, the third round. And it's crazy to think about it as a backup point guard. Yeah. But we do love the backup in the city. We love the backup quarterback. We love the backup coach sometimes. We love the backup catcher with the vibes and everything. Craig, can you play this clip when you get a chance?
Hey, Wendell, game ended about 30 minutes ago. 25 minutes ago, Pat Bev tweeted belt to ass. Obviously, he's talked about you guys in the past. Is that something that pisses you guys off? Do you guys not pay attention to it? You know, how does that?
I mean, to be quite honest with you, no one's really worried about Patrick. I mean, 5 point.
Patrick.
What did you? I don't understand.
I don't know. He knew his points per game. He must be worried about Patrick Bev.
He's trying to get us good point. Buy into his online antics. You know, he's just doing a lot right now. And I guess that's his angle he's trying to take now. He's at towards the end of his career. So, I mean, kudos to him. I guess he did a good job tonight.
And that's the problem right there. Losing mentality. I think I was the highest plus minus off the bench. I think I led the team in blocks. Steals, at 6 dimes, I think 4 assists. You know, young fella, the game ain't all about points, man. I think you had 25 and lost.
I don't know, the game's about buckets.
You're the leading scorer off the bench on your team. But you lost. Who had a better game? Would you take the 5, 6, and 4, 2 blocks and a steal and a dub, a convincing dub, 8 up 15, 16, or the 25 with a loss? Mr. Carter.
Wow. Loser mentality. Kind of reminds me of Carl Anthony Towns and the Timberwolves stat chasing to go get Carl Anthony Towns a 70, and then they end up losing in the end, and Cat goes 2 for 10 in the fourth quarter. Can a backup point guard win you a championship by his mentality only and 5 points per game?
I wouldn't say can win you a championship, but he's going to make an impact. Like, I love everything about what Pat Bev has brought to this team.
Mm-hmm. He goes out there and he takes out Jason Tatum's knees, a la pushing Chris Paul in the back.
And Pat Bev, point guard. Not beyond it. That is on the table. I think that's in the playbook for Pat Bev. I love everything about it. Like the belt to ass tour, tweeting that out after every win is awesome. He also, like, they had a back-to-back against the Raptors. This was like in the first like 2 weeks of the season. And he sat there on the podcast, talked about how he's not afraid of that Raptors team. They got no dogs. That if he walks in an alleyway with that whole Raptors team, he's not worried about it. The Sixers won both games and immediately right to Twitter after the game with, just like I said, no dogs at the Pat Bev pod. So I do love what Pat Bev is bringing to this team. He is the man. He was tailor-made to play in Philly forever. And by the way, having like an incredible season on the basketball court as well. There was the one game where they were super shorthanded with no Maxey, where he scored 27 in that game, tied his career high, shooting the 3 at a really high level after a slow start to the season. So the impact on the court is matching all this mentality stuff. So he's not just a barker. He has the bite that is coming with it. He's playing his role at a high level, and he does bring that pedigree. And when we talk about like Joel, I do think it's important to have these types of guys around him who have this kind of fiery passion, because Joel doesn't always lead by example with the best body language with that kind of thing. So I think having a Pat Bev is a valuable asset to this team.
And the thing, the reason why he works in Philadelphia is because he can back up his shit talking. Like, even if he's a backup point guard, he's on the bench and everything. He's a rah-rah guy, I guess you would argue. He still does give you good minutes now. Might need a little bit of an upgrade, I think, at the at the deadline. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, who knows? Who knows? Mm-hmm. One more for you before I get you out of here. Doc comes back on February 25th. Does he get booed?
Absolutely, he gets booed.
Absolutely.
I think there's no doubt about it. I think
are there people outside his hotel like there were Ben Simmons booing him as he's getting on the bus?
I don't think to that extent, but Doc definitely did himself no favors for most of his time here, both in like the obviously the coaching decisions, and then from like his management of like the media and public face. Like, it always, he had this kind of I'm greater than you kind of vibe to him, and I think that particularly rubs Philadelphians the wrong way. That I think that is something that like fires people up. And when it happened without the results, the job of Doc Rivers was to take this team over the second round hump. He failed three consecutive seasons. That's not going to get the job done. And I do think that he ultimately is booed pretty heavily.
Yeah, I mean, he lied. He basically lied to us. He lied to Kevin Kincaid when he said he wouldn't bench Ben Simmons. He thought he was crazy. He lied to us about benching Maxey last year when he said Maxey texted him saying, hey, I can come off the bench. And that was a complete lie. He's a liar. He's a bold-faced liar. And you know what? Liars win. If Doc Rivers, we can look at it, he's a testament to liars win.
Yeah, it's that's the unfortunate reality of this world. So the Doc Rivers victory tour, I guess, will swing through Philadelphia at that point.
Buddy, fake it till you make it. Sean Bernard, thank you for coming on, buddy. Sean underscore Bernard one. That's a Bernard with an A, two A's, right, actually. So remember that one. Buddy, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me. And hopefully Sixers keep the vibes high the rest of the season.
Let's hope so. Talk to you later, bud.
See ya.
All right, we're going to switch gears here. For a second, we're going to bring Rush Joy on. We've got a lot of hockey news. We got some hockey news. Ross, as we were on this, two more players have now taken leave of absences. So if you're following the hockey news around the area with Carter Hart, with a guy from Calgary, a guy out of Sweden, I believe, and then two Devils now.
Switzerland, but yeah.
Switzerland, excuse me.
Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, same thing. We are now up to potentially.
There's five guys are on leave of absence, indefinite leave of absence.
Indefinite leave of absence. That was in the report. Correct. That there were five people involved with the investigation. Here we go. I am going to say, if you want to hear about the Carter Hart stuff and observations on it, I would go over and check out Snow the Goalie's live show from yesterday. I thought you guys, I don't give you a lot of compliments, Russ, but I thought you did a really good job with it beginning. Man, that's a hard situation to talk about, hard situation to not speculate on, hard situation to give observations on when you're trying to also talk about a game. So what I want to ask you first is, now with the whole Carter Hart leave of absence, how does this affect the trade deadline after hearing Danny Briere talk today? It seems like he wasn't giving assets. He's not just going to give assets away.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mess. Everything's a mess. I don't shy away from things that are happening. Okay, it's not good. The language in the Flyers statement was different from what was in Calgary's statement about Dylan Dubé taking a leave for mental health and being under the care of health professionals. The one that New Jersey just put out about two players sounded a lot more like the Flyers, just like no more comment at this time. And then the Swiss one. The guy doesn't play in the NHL. I don't think he has since 2022. It's not good. Craig pulled up the tweet that I put out a little bit ago. This does make five. The thing that's interesting about the Hockey Canada thing, and I'm going to be careful because anybody has to be, but...
Well, Russ, remember, I asked you about the trade deadline. I didn't ask you anything about Hockey Canada.
I want to touch on this other thing first, though, because people are asking, well, because there have been updates since then. There have been multiple investigations. And the thing is that a lot of people are jumping to a lot of conclusions on Twitter. They might end up being right. They might end up being wrong. But in these multiple investigations, they've had more than five players have discuss things with the authorities. So I'm more interested in, are the five that have taken the leave going to ultimately be the five that are named? Or are we going to see this get up to 10, 15 guys that take an indefinite leave because they're going to be part of this broader investigation? It's that's where I think people are being a little bit reckless. And I totally get it. Like, there are people who are having fun, like trolling, you know, Kevin Hayes' fingerprints are all over because of Anthony's thing from a week or two ago. I could get it. But like, this is a very different thing. There's an alleged victim in all this. Like, it's all bad. Like, I think people, the way that some people are going about this on Twitter, is just like not good. But whatever.
Yeah, it's a shitty situation. It sucks. How's this affect the trade deadline?
Well, the Flyers are not going to be trading Carter Hart at the trade deadline. I think we can pretty definitively say that. We've said since last spring that there were multiple teams that were interested in trading for Carter Hart, but it was all on contingency. It was all, we'll execute. Here is our trade pending him not being named in this investigation or pending him not being part of it. And we talked about that all through the summer. It's always funny to me when you now see people who haven't said a damn thing about it now coming out with, well, you know, there have been rumors since the summer. Like, people didn't put stuff out. It's fine. But like, that has been a thing since last spring. It was a thing over the summer. It's been a thing in the fall. What has made things, I think, even more complicated and probably a bigger issue is that there have been multiple times where the league has been ready to move on things, but they clearly have wanted to defer to the police in London, Ontario. And so the Flyers and their ability to execute a trade, like if they wanted to trade Carter Hart last spring, they haven't been able to because this investigation thing's been looming out there. They weren't able to at the draft. They weren't able to over the summer. They haven't been able to this season. So from that element, from that perspective, the trade deadline hasn't changed because I don't think they were going to offload Carter Hart in the season even if they could. It would be more likely that it would happen around the draft. Okay, so that's one thing. But the rest of it, like, there are other guys that still make sense for them to trade. They've all been talking about, like, Briere has said it, Jones has said it, Hilferty has said it, Tortorella has said it. They're going to have to make some very painful decisions and get rid of some guys that they really like. So, like, the Nick Sealers of the world, the Sean Walkers of the world, could you see a Ryan Poehling traded? Like, they're not going to have there's not going to be a big blockbuster deal. They're not going to trade Travis Konecny at the deadline. They're not going to send Sean Couturier packing, right? So those guys are like off limits. Could you see a Mark Stahl traded as like the wily vet that teams want to have as their seventh defenseman for a playoff run? Maybe, but he hasn't played well this year. So if the hope was like get good game film of Mark Stahl and then like parlay him into being something of value, like that's not going to happen. So like I view it as like you probably have four or five guys. They're all guys that we kind of figured they could look to move on from anyway. And that's where they're at. I think the more interesting thing now, and we talked about this last night doing Press Row Show, is like, all right, if Hart, and this was before, you know, a few of these other things happened, but like if Hart is out for a longer period of time, do they look at acquiring a goalie? Because you have to remember, they're still in playoff contention. And like, they're not going to add to try to like make a cup run, but they're also not going to like try to bottom out here. So they have to find a balance. So the real question is, are they comfortable with Sam Ersson as the number one? Yes. Are they comfortable with Cal Peterson as the backup? Maybe not. Maybe not if you're trying to make a playoff run. So, like, that's maybe one thing that has changed.
So we're looking for a backup goalie, potentially.
I don't know. Like, maybe.
Okay, maybe.
Like, I don't think Cal Peterson's not a very good backup goalie, is where I land. Felix Sandstrom is not a very good backup goalie. They have this Russian kid, Kolosov, but their track record of being able to bring Russians over, he's technically on an ELC. Like, he could, in theory, when the KHL season is over, he could theoretically maybe come over. But the European rinks are different than the North American rinks, the dimensions and everything. And there is an adapting period that you typically have to undergo as a European player. Like, the caroms off the boards, the speed of the game, the way that it's played. You have to adjust. So, like, if Kolosov, like, say you were going to make a playoff run, you think, hey, Kolosov's had a really good season. He has three shutouts in the KHL, all that. And they're like, all right, bring this Ruski over. We're going to have him be backup. Yeah. Well, then you're probably going to send him to the AHL to play with the Phantoms for at least a month so he can get adjusted to the rink and all that. But, like, are you going to really have him be the backup going into a postseason? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's possible. Weirder things have happened.
Russia is not weak.
Russia's not okay. But like, it's not. That's one thing that I'm like, eh. Maybe, like, maybe the goalie, maybe backup goalie is the spot that they look at. But
do you think there'll be a buyback program for Carter Hart jerseys if this goes the way people think it will?
I cannot speak on behalf of the organization because I'm not employed by the organization. I will tell you that I wouldn't blame anybody who would want to try to get. Didn't they do? Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there a thing years ago when Mike Vick, like when the dog stuff came down, wasn't there a buyback program for the Mike Vick jerseys? Am I crazy?
For guns. There's like two Sixers tickets for guys who want to give their guns in. So.
So what do you get if you return a Carter Hart jersey? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Buyback program for Cutter Gauthier jerseys, now for Carter Hart jerseys. Is the new era of orange the same old era of orange? Are the Fun Flyers, are they dead this year? Got railroaded by the Avs. They've lost three straight. Heartbreaker to Ottawa. Played tough yesterday. 4-3 for majority of the game.
Wouldn't even call it a heartbreaker to Ottawa. It was a dog shit performance against Ottawa.
My heart was broken. I wasted 2 hours of my life I'll never get back.
I mean, it was bad. That was a horrific performance. Colorado, they at least fought back. Last night against Tampa, like, they fought back. But, like, you're looking at what happens when you're not a skilled team and you go up against a team that is a cup-contending team. Like, Colorado is much more of a cup threat than Tampa, but they still have exponentially more skill. And they're still, like, much further along in being a potential Stanley Cup-contending team. So, like, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work. Well, in the event the talent also shows up and works, like, you're fucked. So that's what they kind of ran into. My bigger concern is they have Detroit tomorrow. And if they lose the game to Detroit, then you're starting to look at like a 7 or 8 game skid, because then they have Boston on Saturday. They have Winnipeg not far down the line. They also have Florida. Florida's looked incredible. Winnipeg leads their division. Like, you could very easily see this going 7-8 games.
And then the bandwagon is not getting any fuller. And then people will really not know anybody on the Flyers.
Say that again?
I said then people will really not know anyone on the Flyers. I was referencing back to the video that it did down at City Hall.
Got it. Only one guy knew a Flyer. And like, that's, I mean listen, that's
Russ, you're not an idiot. We obviously cut out a couple that, like,
I don't believe
Travis
that.
Or Carter Hart. Well,
why does Ford care so much about my hair today? This is weird.
Don't Ford, read the comments. Just stay out of the comments.
Ford, I'm going to tell you what happened because you care and because you're such a valuable part of the show. You're like, you know how Chuck from Mount Airy said that Marks and Reese weren't actually successful because of Marks and Reese's, because of the callers? This show is only successful because of
not
the commenters.
Success. So that's sadness on Ford.
Ford, let me tell you, I tried a different hair product like a week ago and I broke out in hives. And ever since then, I've been very cautious about putting stuff on. So I wanted to go like a week.
You kind of do look like shit. You've been going down to the arena a little bit too much. Maybe you should
be. I don't look like shit. You look like shit.
No, you look like shit.
I don't.
I look good. You got strong jaw. I've been really hitting the gym a little bit harder than I usually do. Shout out to Ming. Square ass head, but round jaw. Gotta love it. Yeah, you do look like shit. Maybe you should start doing some satellite performances.
Some satellite performances?
Yeah, for the live show.
Now, did I ever tell you, when I was in my last year of teaching, I think it was last year, second to last year, I was doing a lot of those, like, go to the Flyers game, get home around midnight, get up, try to go to the gym at 5, then send the kids off on their way and, like, go teach. And I had one lady, Patrice Milk, very nice lady. She was a history teacher. I don't know if she's still teaching or not. But every day I would run into her and she'd say, "Mr. Joy, how are you doing? How are the babies?" Every day. It was great.
Nice.
Very nice lady. And then one day it was like a 2 games and 3 nights thing with the Flyers. Like, and I go to school, went to the gym that morning, and I was tired. I was very tired. And Miss Moak walked up to me and she didn't say, "Mr. Joy, how are the babies?" She goes, "Mr. Joy." She reaches out and touches my arm. "Will you shut the fuck?" So she goes, "Mr. Joy, are you okay?" And I went, "Oh, fuck."
Yeah.
That's bad.
I mean, do you think you had worse bags under your eyes that day, or do you think Danny Briere had worse bags under his eyes during the press conference today? Because if you look about it, if you think about it, the last year that Danny Briere has had, he's had to fix.
It's been a rough year.
He's had to fix Fletcher's mess. His son pushed a goddamn wheelchair down a bar steps. He's a top five pick, forcing his way out, and now this Carter Hart shit. Like, Danny Briere has probably had one of the worst years.
Let's just play a really quick hypothetical here. Again, hypothetical.
All hypothetical.
If you think that they admitted that they knew about the Gauthier thing, about him not wanting to play for them for over a year, or for about a year, right? So that didn't come out of nowhere. The Hart thing, or the Hockey Canada thing, which are not necessarily linked. Okay, let's be very clear. They're not necessarily linked. I'm not linking them. The Hockey Canada thing's been out there for 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. The second investigation, I think, started back up in 2021 or 2022. So, like, they've known. Like, they've known that he's a player who played for that team.
I'm guessing Canada law is a little different because, like, if you settle on an investigation, are you allowed to reopen an investigation in the United States of America? Obviously, we're two fucking jamokes, like, who don't really know, you know, the law, but, like, I guess it's different in Canada because that, like, I don't think that would fly in the good old USA.
I don't know, man. The Canadian law system is just wild.
Okay.
I'm not really sure. Yeah.
But anyway, they've known about this for years. I mean, 2018 is crazy. Like, when you think about it, like, 5 years ago.
There's also, and I think Kincaid put it in one of the stories, but, like, there was the initial investigation where people were cleared of wrongdoing. Then the victim went after Hockey Canada and another entity for over $3 million in damages. And then they, like, quietly settled it. And then there was public outcry. And then the police reopened the investigation that they initially closed. So, like, I don't know. Like, maybe the thought was at some point that, like, it was done and then it wasn't again. Like, I don't know. I really don't know. People are saying in the comments they miss Kincaid. So hold on. Let me see if I can. Hold on. I'm gonna try to do some Kincaid stuff here real quick. Hold on. All right, I've got a Union scarf here. Make sure that I don't want people to miss Kevin too much. Hold on. We'll do this, and then I have a Chase. This is my Emmy. Okay.
Go ahead.
So Kyle, the thing about Hockey Canada is that it's a nothing burger for now until they have names. It's a big old nothing burger. You see my Emmy?
Yeah.
It's my
good Emmy. Can it become a something burger?
Well, it depends on if you're vegan or not. I think that really, that's really what matters.
Kev, if you were the Flyers, what would you do in this situation regarding, you know, your goalie's out, you got, you know, your best players on IR?
Well, look, man, first thing I do is I try to tell my kids to stop being sick all the time. All right. And then hold on a second. Baxter, the dog. You know, when you're living in Lansdale, you the dog wants to go after the deer.
Mm-hmm. 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 Kev, are you looking forward to easy go mower season? It's about two months.
That electric mower that he has is such bullshit. That's not real.
It's real.
Not real.
It's future.
Not real at all. That's not a real. No, you
it's
can't.
A dental
do that.
Dam for dads.
That's
for,
a violation, Bo.
For suburban dads.
Yeah.
Are we getting this press conference anytime soon from the Eagles? Are they just not putting a
press
conference?
Conference
for Howie?
Who the fuck cares about the press conference? What the fuck do you care about a press conference from the Eagles? It's all bullshit. What are we doing?
I'd like a little statement here or there. I mean, I want to see how
you know,
10
years ago,
an
Eagles press conference would have mattered. 10 years ago, it would have mattered. That's back when
anti-media. They don't ask the,
they don't ask the questions because they don't want to have the line to the team cut off like it was a few years ago. That's what they're all concerned with. It's either that or they have no journalistic integrity. I don't know which. I really don't care. Genuinely don't care. But, like, they don't do a good job as a collective entity now. There's, like, Jeff McClain, who, like, very much has taken on the adversarial positioning on things, and that's fine. But, like, who else is down there that's, like, asking things? Like, Tim McManus. I guess Tim McManus is down there.
The shadows more.
Who else is there? You get, like, the occasional hit piece by one of the Inquirer columnists who goes down and stirs some shit from time to time. But, like, what are we talking about? You know what I mean? Like, what do you expect to hear from this press conference?
It's true, because, like, I mean, Rube will always ruffle some feathers. He'll give his opinion and everything, but he won't give it in front of
Go in front of these guys and say it. He'll occasionally say it.
Is that their job to ruffle feathers?
It's not about ruffling the feathers. It's about, like, asking actual questions that matter. Like,
I always hear that, though. Like, my buddy the other day texted me and was like, why don't you guys have a press pass there? I'm like, what the fuck are we going to do with a press pass? Like, you're going to ask the hard-hitting questions. Like, you think I had the brain capacity or Kev?
I'm not expecting it of you.
Questions, but, like, I'm not just
expecting
saying,
it of you.
But, like, I'm saying, like, what are we...
Lovely,
like,
guy.
What do Eagles fans want? They sucked. The coordinator sucked. Jalen regressed. The team was a bunch of pussies this year. Like, that's what it is. Like, you're not going to get anything from Howie, from Nick, from Jeffrey Lurie. Like, stop looking for, you know, public flogging, you know.
Public flogging. What's going to happen is these people are going to go down to cover this press conference. They're going to ask one or two questions that are, like, maybe a little bit, you know, ooh, and that's it. It's going to be a whole bunch of,
hey, so Nick, who are you thinking of as your offensive coordinator and your defensive coordinator? You have any names lined up there, huh? Do you think you have an idea of who you might bring in? Howie, just out of curiosity, was there any thought of parting ways with Nick? No? Okay, let's go on. Hey, Nick, back to you, long-time fan, first-time questioner. Was it difficult to part ways with Matt Patricia and Sean Desai? Did you want to part ways with Brian Johnson? It didn't matter because Howie and Jeff were going to have whatever they want because that's what happens all the time? Organizational malpractice all the time?
Let's just cancel press conferences.
I'm just saying, like, they're not going to go down and do it. Like, that's the problem. They, like,
what do you want them to do?
I want to know why Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie continue to get a pass every time something goes to shit. Because
Jeffrey Lurie owns the team, the billionaire.
They were both here through the Chip Kelly fiasco. They were both here through some of the Doug Peterson fiasco. I'm being very careful there, okay? They have been here through tumultuous times, and yet it's like nothing bad has ever happened. Howie forgets about entire positions on the field. He gets carte blanche. Like, apparently, in the year of our Lord 2024, you can't also happen to point out the fact that the fucking president or the GM of the team decided, no, we don't need competent safeties. No, we don't need linebackers. Let's just rely on guys that have are historically injured. No, it'll be fine. Who the fuck needs a linebacker? You certainly don't need one if you're going to be going up against a team that has Deebo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey underneath. Definitely don't need that. Who needs a linebacker for that? CJGJ, why prioritize him when you can bring back the animated corpse of Darius Slay and James Bradbury? Great fucking point there. Because CJGJ sucks, I guess. I guess that, like, he hasn't made an impact for Detroit. No?
Yeah, he was out for...
We just like to have these, like... this is the same guy who kept bringing back Jason Peters year after year, who couldn't stay on the fucking field.
Yeah, but he's also got two, maybe even three... Well, I guess I don't know who was there in 2014, but he's got two... He's also fucked up, and then he's also gotten back to two Super Bowl appearances, and he's won one of them. Remember that. Mm-hmm. We've never had a Super Bowl trophy before Howie Roseman was here. So, like, I know, like, we're going back to 2020. We're regressing on our love for Howie Roseman as we were just ball washing him about 12 months ago. Maybe 8 months ago we were ball washing him. So, like, let's relax a little bit on the Howie Roseman slander. Like, yeah, okay.
See, here we go. Here we go, though. Executives and coaches who win Super Bowls don't just fundamentally get, like, carte blanche for the rest of their careers. Like, is that what we're going to do here? Is Howie Roseman going to have gray hair?
But you also have to be good, and you have to be putting the people in position to be good. Both the coordinators suck, dude.
Reportedly, Howie Roseman's the guy
reportedly
who wanted to bring
Nick
in
Sean
Desai.
Hired him. So, like, no, you can't believe all these fucking reports.
Well, I'm saying that a reputable outlet put it out there, right? Am I crazy? There's a question for the press conference. Whose decision was it to bring in Sean Desai?
They're not going to answer it. They're not going to answer
you still it. You still ask the question. You still do the digging and you find out.
Hey, what do you think about the Carter
Hart
situation?
Whose decision was it to let Denard Wilson, who was apparently a qualified defensive coach, fuck off to Baltimore so they could bring in Sean Desai? Where did Sean Desai come from? Where was he?
Temple.
Okay? Like, this isn't crazy. Brian Johnson. Who decided that Brian Johnson was qualified enough to be the offensive coordinator of a team that had legitimate Super Bowl aspirations? Who decided it was a good idea to bring in Matt Patricia, who from day one was going to be viewed as a potential de facto defensive coordinator, that if things went to shit with Sean Desai, that he was there waiting in the wings? Who made the decision that it was a good idea to have Matt Patricia come in after you decided to commit money to a guy that absolutely hated him in Darius Slay? Who happened to have an exploratory knee procedure done after they named him defensive coordinator?
You're never going to know. You're never going to know.
You still do the journalistic thing and ask the questions. You still do the digging. That's what people in the city used to do. That's why I get angry now with a lot of these people that go down and they get paid to cover these teams. I'm sorry, but like, find me the time that like, and I fucking hate doing this, but like, go back to the NBC Sports Philly days and the very beginning and the Comcast Sportsnet days where there was Daily News Live and the people who sat up there. Like, tell me that Paul Domowicz wouldn't ask questions. Tell me that older Rich Hoffman wouldn't have asked questions. Tell me Stan Hockman wouldn't have asked more questions of his respective teams.
More things are like, done in the shadows now.
What the fuck are we doing here?
Now. More things are done in the shadows
bunch,
now.
It is a bunch of fanboys and fangirls who cover teams in this city.
Well, I disagree with that.
Like, that's
there
it.
Some. There might be some. There might be some fanboys and fangirls. But
there
like,
are plenty.
But you can't. But Rush, you can't say all that.
I did.
And then you look at, and then we crush Marcus Hayes and we crush Jeff McLean for their reporting because we would hate the fanboys.
Big difference. No. Big difference, big distinction. Jeff McLean, beat writer, can do what he wants, can dig how he wants. He is there, he is embedded, he is a beat writer. Marcus Hayes, the problem is he's a columnist. He gets to lob grenades. He can go down there and he can answer for his crimes and for his sins when he puts some of the things that he does. But he does distinctly put his coworkers at the Inquirer at a distinct disadvantage by doing some of what he does. So it's fair game to call those guys out if you want. But I will respect what Jeff McLean does because he is the beat guy. Okay? And like, I will continue to say that like, if you write something that's inflammatory, it is your job. And whether or not it's on, you know, the list of job responsibilities, my personal belief is if you write something that is incendiary, you say something that is incendiary, you go down, you make yourself available, and you have that conversation, right?
Will Ann Sanfilippo be in the locker room when Kevin Hayes comes back?
Anthony was down there right after the thing that happened with our show. He walked into the press conference room with John Tortorella and allowed for John Tortorella to go off on his thing. Mm-hmm. I give Ant shit for a lot of things. Okay? I genuinely do. But Ant went down and he answered.
He did. He showed up.
Tortorella also shouldn't have done that.
No.
Because for myriad reasons. But like Ant went down and did it. Marcus didn't do that. Marcus wasn't down there after the thing came out about AJ Brown. To my knowledge, Marcus Hayes did not make the inroads to have a one-on-one meeting on the side with AJ Brown to squash that. So like, what are we doing?
Maybe we should just get rid of press conferences.
You're deflecting it again, though.
Well, how am I deflecting it? I don't know what, but Russ, I don't know what you want. You want people to ask hard questions, but they're not going to answer the hard questions.
Ask the hard questions, and when they don't give you a truthful answer or they deflect, then that tells you something.
What solution?
And then you do your digging.
What problem does that solve? And then you do your digging. Why do I have to ask the question to then do the digging when I can just do the digging and bypass the question?
All right, so let me give you an example. Today, Danny Briere goes up and meets with the media. It's the mid-season state of the team report, right? Yeah. Had been pre-scheduled. They had this leave of absence request yesterday. The Flyers could have canceled today's press conference. It would have been probably pretty understandable. Then all these other players start asking for leave of absence, right? People start connecting dots or saying that there are dots connecting to Hockey Canada. It would have been perfectly acceptable or understandable if the Flyers said, you know, we're not going to go put the GM out in front of this today.
Okay.
We'll reschedule it to tomorrow.
What questions did Danny Briere ask today that were like, oh, fuck, that gave me a little bit more knowledge than I had?
He was asked multiple times about what the league stance was. He was asked multiple times about if Carter Hart was involved, if Carter Hart was one of the people that was, told to surrender themselves. He was asked those questions. He offered the league has told us that we have to, send all... Yeah. But you still ask the questions, Pagan. Well, that's the thing.
You still
ask the questions.
What did we learn in that situation? We learned nothing.
That's not true. What you learned is that by the answer that he gave, it is pretty clear that Carter Hart is one of the people that is at least being questioned. Well, the fact that the way that Briere framed it was, we've been told that any questions have to be sent to the league. Didn't say they're not related. Doesn't necessarily have to, but like, you got out of it at least, hey, there might be correlation. Again, I don't know. You still have to go ask the questions. Like, again, who's responsible for bringing in Sean Desai? Get that answer. Was it a collaborative effort? Who found him? Do that. I don't think that's crazy. Whose idea was it to bring in Matt Patricia? Was it a collaborative effort? Cool. And then do your digging and find out if it's true. When you get these guys on the record, that's where you get more of the actual sources who are around the situation who come out, and they'll speak on background, and you'll get a better informed opinion, right? Because as of right now, no one actually knows, right? Like, it has not been put out into the public who found and decided to hire Sean Desai. There's one report that says it was Roseman, right? Who decided to bring in Matt Patricia? Who decided to promote Brian Johnson? Who decided to let Denard Wilson go to Baltimore? Once you get those answers, and if it is that they say, hey, it was all three of us, it was collaborative effort, you have something to work on as you start to try to do some digging. Or if they say, well, this one was actually, this was all Nick's idea. Okay. You're going to have players reach out. You're going to have people who are in the know in the organization who are going to reach out to these reporters, and they're going to talk to them on background. And then you might actually get a better idea of like why things went to shit this season. But saying like, well, you can't ask a question if you're not going to get an answer, that's bullshit. That's just not how it works.
I think we can determine why things went to shit. The players weren't good enough. The coordinators weren't good enough. The coaching wasn't good enough. Like that.
The roster wasn't good enough. There were holes in the roster from day one.
Yeah.
Again.
So like I don't know. I don't think we're going to get anything from this press conference that you're looking for.
It's not about getting it's not about getting the soundbite. It's about getting something on record and then being able to do the digging and do your job. That's what it is.
I don't agree with that. Give me a substantial, like, convicted, like,
who's
answer.
Who was responsible for the offensive game plan? Who was actually calling the plays last year?
It's going to be collaborative.
How much did Nick Sirianni have to do with the actual game, offensive?
I don't think any of these are going to be answered
on game day. But who called the plays on game day? Ask the question to see if they'll refute the notion that Jalen Hurts was audibling out of multiple calls, perhaps more than they expected from what was being sent into him. Ask the questions.
All right.
That's it.
We'll figure it out whenever this press conference happens. What's your over-under? I think it's going to be 3:30. It's going to suck.
I don't know. Didn't somebody say that it's at 2 or 2:30?
Is it 2 now? Craig?
I saw somebody in the comments. Craig's getting paid $600,000.
To do something else.
Doesn't pull these comments up on the screen. Very sad.
Nope. Very sad.
And somebody like,
oh, he did. He put up a couple of that. Oh, here we go. Eagles press conference is scheduled for 2:30 p.m. today.
2:30.
2:30.
That'll probably happen a little bit late. Probably like a 2:42. I'm going to say like 2:42.
How are we getting his last, you know, PR points, his touch points? Bob Lang getting in on there and everything. Mm-hmm. That was cathartic. I was having a bad day. I appreciate you.
I'm sorry. Like,
I don't give a fuck.
I just showed up. I kind of tried to light a little bit of a fire here.
Could have just done this, Kevin or Kyle. It would have just been a big old nothing burger.
I will say that this whole Britain covering mess is kind of bullshit. I think that was some sloppy stuff by Jeff McLean. I think that like because we were talking about it in our Slack, and I wish Kincaid was on here so I could talk to him about it. But he thinks it was like implied that they were talking about players or new players that don't know him. I reread the quote probably like 10 times, and I was like, Britton Covey seems like he's talking about himself in a way. And Barrett Brooks gets paid to analyze this shit. And if he's getting tripped up by it, maybe he shouldn't be reading quotes. He shouldn't be paraphrasing quotes. You could argue that. But he gets paid to actually analyze this shit. Like maybe that wasn't the greatest reporting. Because if you saw in Jeff McLean's tweet, he did put a bracket in the new quote saying this is the actual quote. I don't know. I don't know. I'm so tired of talking about the media. Like, when things go bad, it's all we ever talk about. And it's like, nobody's perfect at their job, but they also don't cater to, like, you got to understand that, like, Eagles fans were like drunk mongrels in the middle of a parking lot getting fucked up on Busch Lights and Twisted Tees and stuff. And we're not like, we didn't have, like, you know, 4 years of journalism degree plus a master's and have been doing this for the last 25 years. Like, sometimes at some point, and I don't know how many people read the Inquirer, but you got to understand what audience you're catering to, that, like, you can't just, I don't know. You know, I'm going too much off on a tangent. I don't fucking know.
Guess what? I have a question. Is Derek Gunn still doing a show with Jacob?
I couldn't tell you. I don't pay attention to Jacob.
I thought that Derek Gunn was doing a show with Rob Ellis on Jacob, but I have not seen Derek Gunn reporting for Jacob for a while. It's interesting.
Again, couldn't tell you.
It's probably nothing.
Couldn't tell you.
So it's probably nothing.
He's still breaking stuff. I mean, he was the first one on the Brian Johnson stuff, so he's still got some good sources in there and everything. He just doesn't go down to the NovaCare a lot.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, this makes me smile that I've got this one right here. Mama Kincaid. Keeps thinking that her son's on the show.
That is good. You got anything else before we get out of here?
This is all just a big, it's all just an, listen.
We are just on this big rock floating around the universe.
Should we have a conversation about, we can talk about New Hampshire. You want to talk about New Hampshire?
So
Donald Trump beat Nikki Haley.
Not really.
It's kind of a nothing burger of a race.
But it could be a something burger.
It could be a something. We don't know.
There we go.
I'm going to go ask Howie. I have many questions for Howie. So many great, fantastic questions for Howie. We call him Horrible Howie.
Just break
when
the into
Eagles
the fucking,
miss the playoffs. Are they eliminated?
Just go down there and break into the NovaCare complex. I mean,
Horrible
how
Howie.
Security be? We've had fans get into the press conferences after games multiple times. How crazy! I mean, I've gotten through NovaCare one time to drop something off. It's the security isn't too tight. I mean, you might have to sustain a Dom DeSandro blindside tackle, but you know, you get your question out there. Who cares? Like, hey, I actually want
to great
follow up on that guy who just got manhandled by Big Dom and carried out. Can we follow up on that question?
That'd be great. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'd let Big Dom carry me. We'd be like Banjo Kazooie.
Who you got for the
remember
Super Bowl?
Banjo Kazooie and that little bird on the bear show. Remember Banjo Kazooie?
I remember Banjo Kazooie. Who you got in the Super Bowl before we get out of here?
I don't even acknowledge the Super Bowl existing.
Oh, okay.
It's probably going to be the Niners and the Ravens, right?
As he gives his take on.
They made the logo. Like, the logo thing's real.
I like that.
It's actually a nothing burger. I mean, if you think about it, the mere notion that they would put together a logo showing you what the NFL script says a year in advance, it's pretty crazy, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, you also got to think of, like, the Pantones of colors too. When you know you make red and blue makes purple and stuff. So
you can't do kind that. Of think. No, it's Ravens and Niners. Now the better question is who wins Ravens 49ers. There's analysis to be done, Pagan.
Go ahead.
But we're a few weeks away from that.
Okay. Wow, what a tease. And that's how we'll leave you, everybody. We'll leave you with a tease. There's some analysis that Russ is going to break down on the Philly Sports Show about
whoa,
the future
whoa, whoa.
Super Bowl.
I didn't say it was going to be me. All right, hold on. I'm not Justin Timberlake here. And bye-bye, or in a, it's going to be May. All right, no strings attached.
Oh, my God. All right, hey, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you, Deshaun Bernard, for coming on. We will talk to you on next Monday. Take it easy.